poison control centers, and information on how you can find out more here in this special interview segment. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this special episode 15 of The Nursing Show. As I said a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to be doing regular Friday episodes of The Nursing Show with tips and information. And then a couple of times a month, once or twice a month, I'll be providing additional information in the form of interview segments for you to check out some of the things that are going on in nursing or related to nursing in some way. It is Poison Prevention Week here in the United States. I think it's probably Poison Prevention Week worldwide. I suspect that's something that's coordinated somewhere. But that starts March 16th and runs through the 23rd. And as it is Poison Prevention Week, I thought it would be a good time for us to find out a little bit more about our local poison control centers. What kind of information is available there? What resources do they have available for us? And interestingly enough, who mans those poison control lines? Did you know that it was nurses? Well, BSNs are one of the primary resources for poison control information and people who man poison control lines. In fact, there is a national certification for people who work in poison control centers. And we're going to find out a little bit more about that as I lead in now to my interview with Brian Hayes. He is the toxicology fellow at Maryland Poison Control. And he shared some information with me about what to do when you call poison control, what kind of information you might need to have available. If you, for instance, are working as a home care nurse and are in the field and run into a poisoning or an overdose situation, poison control is a resource for you to access and find out more about what is going on with your patient. So without further ado, I'll lead in here to Brian's interview. There are links in the show notes for you to head over and check out Maryland Poison Control's website, a great site, and they have a free email newsletter. Tox Tidbits is sent out to you once a month. You can sign up for that and check out the information they provide monthly, free of charge, and you don't have to be from the state of Maryland to get that email. So go ahead and follow those links in the show notes over at nursingshow.com. So here's my interview with Brian, and if you want to get back in touch with me, I'll have the contact information a little bit later on. Hi, this is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm here today with Brian Hayes from Maryland Poison Control Center, and I'm going to let Brian introduce himself. Brian, welcome to the podcast here.
Thank you very much, Jamie. As you said, I am the clinical toxicology fellow at the Maryland Poison Center, which means I am a pharmacist. I graduated a few years ago, and I am doing a postgraduate two-year fellowship, training fellowship with the Poison Center in toxicology, doing research and teaching and some clinical work. So that's basically my position here.
Great, great. Well, I'm looking forward to having this opportunity to learn a little bit about how poison control centers operate, and specifically Maryland Poison Control, but also to learn a little bit more about what some of the issues are that are facing poison control centers in the United States and perhaps even around the world. So let's lead off a little bit with looking at how, when someone calls into the poison control center, who are they speaking to when they get someone on the other end of the phone? What is their qualifications?
That's a great question. We get that all the time. So at least at the Maryland Poison Center, all of the people that answer the phones are either nurses or pharmacists with extra or additional training in toxicology. We have 10 full-time poison specialists, as they're called. Six of them are pharmacists and four are nurses. And they staff the phone 24/7, all day, every day for the year. So we have people that are dedicated for the overnight shifts as well. So anytime you call, you'll either get a pharmacist or a nurse that's been trained in toxicology. Some poison centers across the country have they use basically the same approach, but some also have sort of an intermediate training type person called a poison information provider. And those are they are also certified in toxicology as well, but they just are usually more of a part-time basis. But we have all full-time people here in Maryland.
Now, you said certified in toxicology. Is that a national certification standard? Or
it is. All poison centers in the United States, there's 61, and they are all certified. The poison centers themselves are certified through the American Association of Poison Control Centers. And when a poison specialist gets hired and they come on board, within 2 years of them being on board as a poison specialist, they need to take an exam, and that's to show that they are knowledgeable enough in toxicology to operate on the phones, and then they also become certified as a certified poison specialist.
Great. I was not aware of that. So that's a whole nother range of, and this would be something that like an existing RN or somebody would come in as a specialist, either as a pharmacist coming in or as an RN coming in, and then they would be trained and then eventually take this additional certification test.
That is correct.
Okay. Yep. All right. So someone calls in and they call the 800 number. Now I'm assuming that the 800-222-1222 is the national U.S. hotline, and that's standardized across the United States now?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, just a few years ago, all the poison centers had sort of their own numbers to call, just a local number. But a few years back, we got the 800 number certified. So it's sort of like if you call 911. The goal is that wherever you are in the country, you'll get routed to the closest poison center to wherever you are.
Okay.
So if you call that 800 number and you're in Pennsylvania, for example, you'll get routed to the Pittsburgh or the Philadelphia Poison Center, depending on your location. And so if you're in Maryland, you'll get routed to the Maryland Poison Centers for purposes that are due to location.
Okay. So I call in, I get one of the poison specialists, either a pharmacist or a nurse online. What is the process? Let's just, for instance, say that my child has gotten into the gardening supplies and has gotten into some fertilizer and may or may not have ingested or come in contact with that product. What is the process now? I've called in. I'm a parent. I'm upset. I'm concerned. How does this call progress from this point?
The good news is that, at least for the Maryland Poison Center, we have all the people that operate the phones have been working here for a long time. The least experienced person has been here for over 6 years.
Wow.
We have a very low turnover at our particular poison center, which is fantastic. So the point of that, me saying that, is that when you call and you're an upset parent, one of the first goals is to calm the parent down. Because most of the time when kids get into stuff, they usually don't get into enough to hurt them. Even if it is a toxic substance, a lot of times they don't get into enough to cause toxic effects. So what they're going to do is after they calm down, they're going to get a history from the parent. How old is the child? How much does the child weigh? What is the substance? And usually we like to get real specific as far, not even, you know, just like a fertilizer. If they have the actual brand name of the fertilizer, that really helps us in looking up the product and finding out what the actual ingredients and concentrations are in that particular product. And then we'll ask them for, well, how long ago do you think this was? What's the maximum amount that the child may have gotten into? That's really key with us because we like to really operate cautiously. So if the child ingested a maximum amount of something and that amount is not going to be a problem, then that's obviously a good thing. So we try to be very cautious with our estimates. And then we sort of walk the parents through what typical signs and symptoms might be happening ask them if any of these things are happening with their child. Is there anything abnormal that they're noticing? Are there burns around their mouth? Are they acting lethargic? Whatever the case may be. And then we make an assessment based on what the product is, what the estimated amount is that the child may have gotten into. And we have, based on lots of literature that's out there on different substances, we have guidelines, and each poison center has guidelines, and there are national guidelines as well for certain substances. And we make a determination on whether or not that child can be monitored at home with just a simple dilution with a drink of water or snack or something, or whether or not they need further attention. And that would be going to the emergency department most of the time. when they do need to be referred. And sometimes we get calls too, and we have a 911 is really calling us, but it's a 911 three-way call with the parents on the phone as well. And then we can make an assessment on whether or not EMS needs to be dispatched to that house or whether or not it's actually not even going to be necessary in that particular case.
Okay, that's something I was not aware of. As a working paramedic here in Maryland, we get poison control on the line via our radio system, and we speak in a three-way conversation with you and our medical control physician. And I was not aware that there was the ability to even make that assessment at the 911 level prior to even my getting the call. And I wouldn't expect to be aware of that because our tones wouldn't have gone off. We wouldn't have been dispatched to that particular location.
Right. And a lot of times we do get called too when it is a 911. When we get kind of called through 911, EMS usually has been dispatched already. So a lot of times what we do is we wait online on the phone with the 911 operator and the parent or whoever is there until EMS gets there, and then we kind of assess it on the scene with EMS. But more commonly, like you said, we get the call through the emergency three-way call with EMS already on the scene, and then we get involved as well as the hospital and kind of what are we going to do during transport kind of stuff there. So
now, is this the when I speak to someone via my radio system via Syscom in Maryland here, am I speaking to the same poison control specialist that is manning the phone lines for the parent as well, or is this a separate? Do you have a separate group of people that are specialized in dealing with medical providers?
Nope. All of our specialists are qualified to do all of the operations. So when you call, we normally, except on the overnight shift when there's only one poison specialist here, during the daytime there's anywhere between two and four at any given time during the day. So those same people will also answer the emergency EMRC, EMS phone as well. So it's all the same people.
Now, do you have a specialized resource that your people use? As I'm assuming you must be using a computerized database system of some kind. Are you not Googling, obviously, the product, but do you have access to things like material safety data sheets, or do you have a dedicated poison control database that you access to find information? Because you said you needed specific information on the product and the manufacturer, because you can actually pull up concentrations of different toxic substances.
We can, and there is a specific one for that we use most of the time. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but there's a database out there called Micromedics.
Okay.
And there's a subset of that Micromedics called PoisonDex. And that is one of the main databases that we use at the Poison Center. It's funny that you mention it, though, because there's sometimes those databases can only be updated at whatever intervals they're updated at, you know, every month or and so on. So sometimes, for example, I'll give you an example. A lot of the Sudafed products, the products over the counter that used to contain pseudoephedrine, now that they're limited by federal law and usually behind the counter at the pharmacy, a lot of those companies change their product to contain another ingredient called phenylephrine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lag time between when that actually happens and when that information gets entered into the PoisonDex database. So every once in a while, it may not be completely up to date as far as that goes. So it was kind of funny that you mentioned sort of Google, but it's actually not that funny because we do use Google sometimes. When we get a product name, I mean, that's why we really want to know exactly what it is, because, you know, there's 100 different NyQuil products out there, and what
right.
kind of drugs do they contain? What are the concentrations in those? And sometimes the PoisonDex database that we use may not have every one of those. So we can go to Google or NyQuil or wherever we can go to an actual website and find out what the ingredients are. And then once we know what the ingredients are, then we have training in what to do once we know exactly what the ingredients are. But we do use Google sometimes.
Well, no, that's
Google's a great resource.
It's a great tool when you can't find something you need to find in a hurry. It can be an excellent tool to use. I agree with you 100%. Now, this, you brought up an interesting point. I know when I go into people's homes and are looking at their medications and their med lists, or sometimes if they're unresponsive, I'm looking in their medicine cabinet. Mm-hmm. Do you run into issues where people are using, you know, NyQuil from 10 years ago that has a different formulation? Or is that something that you ask about? How current is the medication? Or is that something that you've seen that has come up?
We... I can't say that we've seen it come up too often. We do have a lot of times where there's empty pill bottles around, prescription pill bottles, mm-hmm. usually, or not necessarily. It could be Tylenol or over-the-counter products as well. And sometimes we'll ask about expiration dates and stuff. But a lot of times the expiration dates that are on there are really, it doesn't necessarily mean that the drug's going to not work anymore. It just means that it may have a little bit less of an effect than it would have had prior to the expiration date. But that's a good point that you bring up with, for example, we'll go back to the NyQuil products that may have contained Sudafed before, and now they contain the phenylephrine. So what we do is we literally ask whoever it is, whether it be the EMS provider or the parent or the caregiver, to read us the ingredients off the side of the bottle. And that's really what helps us the most, rather than just even a product name sometimes is what is it? How much acetaminophen is in a teaspoon? How much Sudafed? How much Benadryl? That kind of stuff. And that usually helps us. That way it doesn't really matter how old the product is. As long as there's a label on there, we can kind of figure out exactly what's in it.
Well, that's great. I mean, it just occurred to me when we were talking about that, because you were talking about the changes in the Sudafed, and I wondered about old medications. So that's mm-hmm. a great way to handle that and look at that. When different medical personnel come in contact with people that might have suspected poisonings, and I'm talking about paramedics, EMTs, or even nurses that are doing home care visits, what information is vitally important that they have available for you if they're the one calling in?
If it's a healthcare provider that's calling in, that's actually a little bit more helpful, because a lot of the more serious drugs, overdoses will cause like hypotension and bradycardia and things like that, and that's not really easily assessed by a layperson like a parent or a caregiver that's not really trained in medical procedures. So things like that would really help. Can we get a pulse rate? Do we have respirations? Do we have just basically the vital signs? Those are really important. And then also, what kind of drugs are around? Like what are the drugs that they have available to them, and what doses? And even things such as when were they, a lot of times the pharmacies are getting pretty good now about having lots of information on the label. So you can even look usually on the label and find out how long ago was this filled from the pharmacy, because a lot of times we'll get a call that this was filled yesterday and they're all gone. Or we could, it was filled 3 months ago, and so we're not quite sure how many were actually missing because they should all be gone. So that kind of information helps too, because we can sort of get an assessment of how much was actually involved in this ingestion.
So they really need to have a handle on the big picture and get a good history and then be able to relay that information along with current vital signs and patient presentation on to you.
And it's good too, because we seem to have a pretty good relationship with the EMS people that call in too, and so they obviously give us all of the information that they normally give, and then the poison specialists are pretty good at asking, depending on what other drugs are on the scene, they're really good at asking the right questions in a quick time frame to make a pretty good assessment if that information wasn't provided already. So
now, that helps. No, that's fantastic, and it's something that we need to be aware of. I think many of us aren't aware of poison control centers and how much information. I also know that you like to provide a lot of information just for public education purposes. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's most poison centers provide nationwide, and is that something that any healthcare person or any person in the public can contact and get publications or information?
Yeah. The answer to your second question is yes. Anyone can call in and get any information from us. We're very fortunate in that in order to be certified, like I said, under the American Association of Poison Control Centers, there needs to be a certain amount of education that needs to be done from each poison center each year. We're very lucky in Maryland in that we actually have two coordinators. We have a specific person that's the professional education coordinator. And she is in charge of giving education to EMS people, to nurses, to hospitals, all the professional education type things. And then we have a separate person that's dedicated to the public education issues. So she does a lot with schools, a lot with safe kids organizations and parent organizations, and basically poison center outreach and education and just kind of making people aware that the Poison Center is here, all that kind of stuff. So we're lucky in that we have two separate people that kind of each have their own track that they're dedicated to. And each of those positions, that they give literature on obviously the different scope. But like our professional education coordinator sends out monthly Tox Tidbits, which is just a one-page article on what usually we like to do it on a topic that's been coming up a lot in the recent month. So for example, when the new cyanide antidote became available, we did a talk, and it's just a one-page write-up so that it's easy for ED or emergency department or EMS people to read very quickly and just get a basic understanding of what's going on. So we like to do that kind of stuff every month in addition to all the other stuff, education kind of stuff that we like to do.
Yeah, so. And I print that stuff out and post it in my fire department and it's great. It is literally a one page quick look that you can put on a bulletin board in your facility. And it's just a quick read for people as they're going by. And it just provides a great overview of information. I subscribe to your newsletters on email and have been for some time and really enjoy getting them. So, now you guys are located at mdpoison.com, Maryland Poison, mdpoison.com. And there actually is a link to sign up for those email newsletters right there on the main page.
There is, and I'm glad you brought that up, because what I was going to say is, if you don't like getting your email inbox cluttered with everybody's email inbox is always full of stuff. So if you're one of those people that just likes to go to the website, they're all up there and you can read all of them online without getting a monthly email too, if you prefer it to be that way. But like you said, mdpoison.com, and you can get all that information.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to, as we wrap up the interview here a little bit, I want to just kind of move into looking at the upcoming, or actually when this interview airs, it'll be National Poison Control Week, or poison prevention. What is the big issue this year for poison control centers? What has been the targeted topic for you to be focusing on as community outreach and poison prevention?
Well, our goal always, it doesn't really change from year to year, and our goal is really to educate the public on what the Poison Center does and why it's important for people to call. And I think another one of the questions that we wanted to cover was kind of what issues are facing poison centers these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's going to sound monotonous because it seems to be the same issue that's facing everyone, but it's really funding issues.
Mm.
Depending on which poison center you are at, a lot of the funding comes from either the hospital that you're situated in. Here in Maryland, we're part of the pharmacy school. So we get a lot of our funding through the state, but funding is really an issue as far as just funding the staff and the outreach and the education and things like that. So that's obviously always an ongoing issue. But the more that we can provide education and outreach and have people calling into the Poison Center for whatever reason, then we can increase the number of calls that we get and basically show that. It's been shown many times that poison centers reduce the amount of emergency department visits each year because of the way that we're able. I think up like 70% of the calls that we get, we're able to manage at home, rather than those patients going to the ED and spending healthcare dollars. So it's actually a really good thing to call, and that way we can hopefully keep most of the people at home, and save the healthcare dollars and the stress on the emergency departments and the EMS people.
So it's important to stress to everyone that's listening to spread the word that their local poison control center is a resource for them, not just for that single isolated poisoning emergency that they may want to cross once in a lifetime, but also as a resource for ongoing prevention efforts. And certainly they should contact and utilize them and make sure that they let their lawmakers know and be aware that this is an important resource to have available.
Exactly.
Great.
We're also available too. We do a lot of. I just wanted to mention one more thing.
Oh, that's absolutely.
In addition, to all of the calls that we handle, as far as exposures or people getting into things, the Poison Center also gets lots of calls about just typical drug information type calls, drug interactions, and typical drug information calls. So, if any of the nurses or EMS healthcare providers out there need to know something about a drug, then they can certainly feel free to call the Poison Center for something like that as well. Even if it's not an emergency call, we can certainly provide that information. We also, a lot of times it's very helpful, is EMS will arrive on the scene somewhere and there's empty bottles and no labels, and all they have are the tablets, and we can actually help identify those tablets as well for them based on the imprint codes on them. So that way we can help determine what the possible overdose was, and that's obviously really helpful in situations like that as well.
And you also deal with all kinds of environmental poisonings, all kinds of situations, not just drug overdoses, mm-hmm. not just in, accidental ingestions, but things like spider bites, plant contacts, things like that as well.
Yes. Fortunately, in Maryland, we don't have a big problem with the poisonous spiders and snakes, but we do deal with those kind of calls as well, poisoning by spiders or snakes. We don't have a lot of marine poisonings, like poisonous fish around the Maryland area, fortunately, as well. But anywhere from drugs, but it's also about plants and, you know, the chemicals that you have around your house, or spiders or snakes, or, you know, we really run the gamut as far as what types of things, mercury thermometers that are really not very mainstream anymore. There's not a whole lot of them out there, but there are other products that do contain very small amounts of mercury, like the fluorescent light bulbs and things like that be broken. And Baltimore really still has a big problem with lead. So we certainly deal with some lead poisoning issues as well. So it's really, it keeps the job interesting, because you never know what kind of call you're, it's just like when you guys respond to a scene, you never know what you're going to get. And it's always, even if it's the same drug, it's always a different scenario. So it keeps it very exciting and interesting.
Well, that's fantastic. And it's important to understand, I think, that you're a resource just of a broad scope of opportunities for anybody in the healthcare field to get additional information about all kinds of things. Like you said, lead poisoning, contact with other substances, plants, animals, all information can be found with your local Poison Center, and specifically at the Maryland Poison Center. Brian, I want to thank you very much for sharing your time here with the community here in the Medicast Network, both the Nursing Show and the Medicast podcast. Is there any final point you'd like to leave with the medical people that are listening to the shows?
I guess the only thing is just to kind of reiterate that we are here as a consultant resource, and we love to get calls, especially from EMS and healthcare providers, and we look forward to working with them in the future and to providing as much information as they need, and we're really here to help. So to really just feel free to call whenever you have a problem that you think we can help with.
And that number is. Go ahead.
1-800-222-1222. That's the national toll-free hotline for poison centers.
Fantastic. Wow, what a great interview. And Brian, thank you very much for sharing that valuable information with the listeners here at The Nursing Show. You can head over to the Maryland Poison Control Center site at mdpoison.com and find out all of the other great information they have available, and links back to maybe your local poison control center. If not, contact them directly yourself and find out what they can provide for you to make you a better nurse in your community. If you want to get back in touch with me with comments on this or any other episode, you can reach me here at The Nursing Show at comments@nursingshow.com. You can also leave comments over at the blog at The Nursing Show site, or you can reach me on the Skype line at PodMedic, PodMedic, and you can catch me via the Skype line. No music to wrap up the show this week, since we're already running close to 30 minutes on the show. But I still want to remember to leave you all and wrap up the way I always do. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, reminding all of you to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. I'll be back at the end of the week with another regular episode. Take care.